From the creators who brought you RuPaul's Drag Race and Million Dollar Listing, this is World of Wonder's Wow Report. Things that make us go wow.
Welcome to the Wow Report. I'm Tom Campbell, filling in for Fenton Bailey.
Who are you? I've never seen you before. I'm completely shocked.
But I'm back, and I'm here with James St. James, who is the rock, the cornerstone, the keystone, the Magna Carta, the Rosetta Stone,
the one who has nothing else to do week in, week out, but be with you maniacs. I do just want to say, though, very quickly, happy Ides of March to those who celebrate. We are celebrating today the assassination of Julius Caesar. If that is something you do, I do it every year.
Well, I sandwich it between Pi Day and St. Patrick's Day. It's a lot going on.
Yeah, there is.
Also joining us, the longest introduction in the history of radio, is Blake Jacobs.
Hi.
Our producer, who is more than a producer. He is, I would say he's the sex symbol of the Wild Report. Can we say that? I've missed the last few reports. I feel deathly out of touch. I'm so glad to connect. And I also saw Blake for the first time in person, and he's
half the man he used to be.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mostly just in character, but also body mass. We are going down the top 10 things in pop culture that made us go wow. Fenton is away, and we're just going to jump into it. Number 10.
Number 10.
One of the first things I did when I came home was I went to my DVR because I still have cable. I went to I thought I'm going to watch all the feuds, the Capote versus the Swans. And I know you guys have talked about it and I listened to some of the shows I haven't been on, but I just have to say, because I was obsessed with it without being able to actually watch the show. I've read every article. I've read profiles. I've Wikipedia'd all the women, and it's fascinating to read about, but I hate to say it, and it might be my Ozempic, it's a crummy show.
Thank you. Dear God in heaven.
Crummy.
I'll tell you something. It starts off with a lot of hope and a lot of promise.
Everything I needed to know, I learned in the first episode.
Yes. It could have been two episodes. It could have been one episode.
You learned that he's a drunk. You see him at different stages of his life. So you know he's a drunk. He's never going to get better. He destroys his long-term relationship. He hooks up with a guy who's going to abuse him. The story of Happy Rockefeller's period, spoiler alert, reads much better than you have to watch. Because it gets the Ryan Murphy, like, horror blood. I asked women friends of mine, is it possible that a woman could have that much of a period? And they're like, and not and live, you know, it's just like a death scene.
It was a bloodbath. It was like something.
And I left the first episode. I watched the whole first episode. I was like, I'm going to be here for it. And no one's likable. Not that they have to be likable or that they were likable, but I sort of had this, like, I have to swallow, I'm going to throw up feeling, kind of that putrid taste left. There, I said it. And you sometimes it's like, well, Ryan Murphy starts strong, but he ends badly. No, everything's just so spoon-fed.
It could have easily been one or two episodes. Yeah. And the fact that they had to stretch it out to eight means that there were whole episodes that were nothing but fantasies. There were whole episodes where in heaven talking to each other. And, or it's people who never met in real life are brought together to have expositional dialogue that goes nowhere. It is a wasted opportunity because Tom Hollander is really funny as Truman.
Yeah, a great actor. It's got all the trappings. And second, I, at the last minute, at the end of being in New Zealand, at the end of, I don't know, I had to pay a lot of bills and do all these things for other people. And I was like, you know what? I'm going. And I saw someone say, there are still good, reasonably priced tickets to see Madonna on Monday. So I bought two tickets, front row seats.
Wow.
To Madonna that were reasonably priced. They had not been marked up yet. She didn't sell out. So they were just like, they were the regular price. You know, with the configuration of the stage and the runways, there's a lot of front row seats. And I got nothing new to report here. I got nothing sassy to say, except it wasn't a nightmare. It wasn't a wreck. She works hard. It's a generous program. Did you guys see it?
I saw it, but I didn't see it up close.
So much of it I'd seen online. So much of it. But I have to say, started a little late, which I knew. I got there around 8:30.
No.
Went on around 10. And I left around midnight. Not out of disgust, just out of like, I'm not a person.
So what song did you leave out of?
I left before, but I was hearing Ray of Light as I left.
That's her best song. That's her best song.
A good one, but you only missed Take a Bow after that, because after Take a Bow is when we left, and we were right by the exit. We were out of there and home by 12:30.
When Fenton saw it, he had a complete revelation about his life over the Live to Tell, and it changed his worldview, and it was something that he sobbed uncontrollably.
It brought him to tears.
He started crying as he was telling us about it as well, that it was something that really, really moved
him. It was a beautiful moment. I knew it was going to happen, which doesn't take away from it. It's very impressive. Very few people could present it in such a profound way. And Madonna's weaknesses still are, she is a narcissist. She supposed to thank everyone for being with her all these years. And it's like, oh, this is the part where I have to go against my personality type and say, thank you all for being with me. I've done all this for you. And then she talks about herself for 20 minutes. If she had done like a medley of four or five dance songs, I would have collapsed, because her catalog is so rich and important to me. Thank you for letting me mind dump.
Who was the guest when you were there? Was it Cardi B?
I don't know. Someone named Cardi B.
Oh, so jealous.
That's a fun moment, but it goes by quick. But I, you know, just the back of my mind, I didn't think of it until I got there. I thought, will she pull Britney up? You know, the thing that changed Madonna the most, becoming a mother. That's when she realized she wasn't the center of the universe. It's like, bitch, we all know that. Anyway, it's still playing somewhere.
Phoenix Saturday night.
Woo! Here's the last observation I made the night that I was going to see her. And this will lead into my number 7 coming up, which is 30 years. I went with my friend Laura. I don't know if you know her. I used to work with Laura. 30 years ago, Laura moved to LA. I was working at MTV, and I had just decided I was going to go see Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet for the first time at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas in 1994. She said last minute she'd go. I ran. I got her. We caught a plane. We just made it, skin of our teeth. But we were going to see these really old performers, and we were going to laugh at them and with them and have a great time. Ended up falling in love with Steve and Edie. 30 years later, I was rushing to pick up Laura to go see an artist who was older than Steve and Edie. Madonna is older than Steve and Edie when I saw them in 1995.
Really interesting, yeah.
Edie was 58 when I saw him. Madonna was 65.
That's like a thing I saw this week and told James. The movie Dazed and Confused from 1993 was about 1976. A similar movie made today would be made about 2007. Crazy.
Anyway, that was my little thing, and I will be talking about Stephen Edie coming up, so don't go away. That's a big tease. We're going to have the biggest ratings ever.
Oh, God, people hanging on the edge of their seat.
Let's move on then to something truly interesting at number 9.
Number 9.
It is week 79 of the Princess Kate saga, The Missing Princess. We've been talking about it pretty much every week. I've been banging on about this.
I thought you were insane when you first brought it up.
No, and now
I realize you know all things, and I should be listening.
I do. And I want to say that, you know, it's a very fast moving story, and every week there's more and more that keeps coming out and keeps getting weirder and weirder and weirder. Last week when we were talking about it, there had been two pictures that Palace had released that had both been debunked. And the one was the Mother's Day photo, you know, that Reuters and the AP and the British news agencies all put a kill notice on, which is very unusual to do. That means there's really something strange going on. This week, Kate, I put it in parentheses, in quotation marks, or someone pretending to be Kate, went on their Instagram saying, you know, as an amateur photographer, I sometimes edit the photos that I take. Well, number one, that wasn't Kate. Okay. Number two, the royals do not just take pictures and put them up on Instagram. There are agencies. Their assistants have assistants who have assistants who it goes through committee after committee after committee, every single picture. Nobody is just tossing pictures up and nobody is just going on say, no. None of that is true. Okay. Oh, then there was another photo that they put out, a third photo this week of the, Kate and William in a car and Kate's face is turned away. That turned out to be debunked as well. The bricks did not line up. Her face was used from a funeral from 2 years ago. They darkened it, everything like that. So they keep doing this thing time and time and time again. They have one job, and that's PR, and they are screwing up royally. I mean, royally screw up.
Who does their PR, Mr. Magoo?
Well, that is it. That is just it. Now, another thing that happened concurrent to all of this that is just fascinating is what they call in the PR biz a soft launch. Okay. And William is soft launching his mistress, Lady Rose Handley, the Marchioness of Cholmondeley. Okay. And suddenly this week, there were articles in the Telegraph, articles in the Guardian. Who is Lady Rose? Why, let's just introduce you to this random, you know, aristocrat that nobody's ever heard of before, but she is William's mistress. And she and the rumor is that Lady the Marchioness of Cholmondeley, Lady Rose, was pregnant, is pregnant with William's love child. And that is why Kate has removed herself. Kate and Lady Rose were friends. Kate says, I am not going to play these games. I am in charge. And until I get $1 billion for my divorce or you get rid of the side piece, I'm not playing your palace games. I am not showing up for any photos. I am not doing shit for you, William. I'm having psychic visions the same way I had when Angel Melendez disappeared. I hear in my head them saying, oh, shit, what are we going to do? We fucked up. How are we going to fix this? I hear that in William's mind, just psychically putting that out there. I know that's what So if something did happen to Kate and William goes down for murder, if there's some domestic abuse, if he goes to prison and Prince Charles dies, because we know Prince Charles is on his deathbed, we know he's probably got weeks, if not months left. The way the succession goes is it goes from Charles to William. If William can't fulfill his duties, it goes to little George, but George cannot be king until he's 18. So Prince Harry has to be regent. So Prince Harry is next in line. So we'll have 7 years, 8 years of Harry.
The spare is no longer the spare.
That's why Harry was summoned to the palace for his 45-minute meeting with his father to say.
By the way, 45 minutes with King Charles would be plenty.
Exactly.
In my opinion. That's fascinating, James.
Yeah.
I want you to be wrong, but if she were just sick, which I hope, she, you know, like that's my fear. It's like, why would they do all the shenanigans to cover it up?
Because if you're just lying in bed and you aren't feeling up to going out or being seen on the balcony or something like that, just take a phone to your face and say, hey, I'm fine. You guys don't worry about it. You know, I'll be
with
back.
With today's paper.
But the fact is, some people were saying that she, you know, maybe had the abdominal surgery left her with a colostomy bag and she's on prednisone and she's puffy and she's uncomfortable and all that, which could very well be. I mean, it could very well be. Or, you know, some people think that maybe she has an eating disorder and she's getting help for that. Other people said bad plastic surgery. There's all sorts of things. But I do just want to leave you once again with start looking for, because the pictures are everywhere of Lady Rose Handley, the Marchioness of Cholmondeley.
I may have to jump off the WoW report and start Googling now.
Because she's not a, you know, it's funny because these men, these royal men, they have these beautiful wives and then they have these horsey looking mistresses.
But I was also thinking like King Charles has no moral ground to stand on if he does have a mistress and he does want to make switch her out and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and it's funny because it's not funny. It's very sad that, you know, Queen Elizabeth died and it literally took 18 months to destroy something that, that they had built up for hundreds of years. And we are living in historical times in every, you know, everywhere we go. We are watching the disintegration of the British royal monarchy.
I saw a private DM from Prince that says, "Hello, this is Princess Kate Middleton. I didn't really die, but I need 200 pounds in order to leave the country. I have Diana here with me too." And then it says, "Hey, love, it's Diana." Oh, she's not dead.
Well, that's so they have a GoFundMe page to get to help her get out of.
That's just stupid. The only thing that makes sense to me right now is someone saying is that Kate is in competing in All Stars 9.
UK versus the world.
All right. We're moving on to something even more exciting. Each number gets even more excited. Number eight, Blake.
Number eight.
I went to this weekend to see Kylie Minogue in Vegas. Kylie, she even mentioned that she had had a big week this week because, as we mentioned before, her and Madonna shared the stage for the first time at Madonna's show last Wednesday or something. Thursday, I believe. The tickets were really hard to get, and there were like four of us trying to get them. And my friend Steven was the only one to like actually get in, and he got in on his phone and on his computer. So he had four tickets for Friday, four tickets for Saturday. So
large, my friend.
Well, we both ended up going on Friday with our friends Travis and Michelle, who were both only there for the night.
I have never heard of your friends Travis and Michelle. You've totally just made up two
very
people.
Dear friends, Travis.
Oh, honey,
I've known you for 15 years, and you have never once mentioned someone named Travis and Michelle.
Well, Travis is actually my friend Travis Walk, who is actually left Twix on the Twix commercials.
What? You're totally making this up.
Oh, no.
I'm all ears.
I've seen all these photos from the Kylie show in Vegas, which was really good, by the way. People are right next to Kylie. Well, we couldn't see a damn thing because we were, I guess, in general admission. And these people are way richer than me because they must have bought a table. And they didn't have a screen in the house.
What?
Yeah, you could. And she's like 4'9", so you can't see her. And the general admission is kind of set up, but it has no riser. So if you're short and you show up late, you're just fucked. So
this is the first Kylie review I have heard or seen from the bad seats. I think it's very important. I think that's maybe another service that we could do, just buy the worst seats to see people and just talk about their concert.
We also had tickets for Saturday night, so we went back. And this time we went with our tall friends who are super fans. So they got there like super early and they saved us a spot. So when the short folks got, like us got there, we just got to stand in front of them. So I got to see the whole show, which made it better. So
I feel better for you.
If you do get the cheap seats, make sure you get there early to get up against the rail if you're short.
All right. And
this is my t-shirt. It's really cute.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And it has all the dates on the back.
James, are you familiar with Blake having any tall friends? I'm not familiar with him having any tall friends.
Yeah, since James knows all my friends.
I don't know.
Well, for Christ's sakes, how many times? Whatever.
On that joyous note of brotherhood, let's take a little break. We're going to do a commercial. We're going to be back. We're going to get into the countdown of the top 10 things that made us go wow. But before we do, Blake, do you have a little question to tide us over?
I do. What did the band Toto, the movie The Lion King, the animated 80s show Animated Adventures of the Gummy Bears, and the composer John Williams all have in common?
There was an animated show about the gummy bears?
There sure was. And then the theme song goes, "Gummy bears bouncing here and there and everywhere."
We're just making shit up left and right.
We will reveal the answer to that provocative question and so much more when we return. You're listening to the WOW Report on Radio Andy.
I think you're having an aneurysm. I totally think that this is just like shit that's leaking out of your mouth.
You're listening to World of Wonders WOW Report. Things that make us go wow.
Left Twix.
Welcome back to the WOW Report. I'm Tom Campbell with James St. James, Blake Jacobs. We are in the midst of counting down the top 10 things that made us go wow this week. Right before the commercial, Blake asked us a question, and we're going to try to figure out the answer. Blake, go.
I asked, what did the band Toto, the movie The Lion King, the animated 80s show, The Animated Adventures of the Gummy Bears, which did exist, and the composer John Williams, what do they all have in common?
They were all part of that awful Star Wars television special.
B. Arthur. They are all secretly MAGA, and they're all in the consortium to buy TikTok.
You're just pulling stuff out of your ass now.
That's what the show's all about.
They all have Joseph Williams in common. That's John Williams' son, who was the second lead singer of the band Toto. He was the adult singing voice of Simba, and he sang the theme song that went, gummy bears bouncing here and there and everywhere.
If you learned this from TikTok, I hope TikTok does get banned.
I did learn it from TikTok.
There you go. I'm hoping TikTok gets banned. I was on the fence about it. Now I think it should be banned because that's crazy knowledge to have.
James, you weren't shocked?
By your revelation about Joseph Williams?
Yeah, I was today years old when I learned that.
Well, I'm gobsmacked by
this. We're all a little richer. Thank you. We're moving on our countdown to number seven.
Number seven.
I mentioned Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet earlier. When people don't know who Steve and Edie are, Google them, Steve and Edie. But Steve Lawrence, 88 years old, passed away after a long kind of battle with Alzheimer's. I know him because he was on the Carol Burnett Show like 39 times. She posted about him. She also said that Steve and Edie were like family to them. Steve and Edie were a husband and wife team that met on the Tonight Show. Steve Allen's Tonight Show, the very first Tonight Show. He was a boy singer. She was a girl singer. They met on the show. They started doing duets. And late night in 1950, I think four when it went national, was like the dawn of the internet. It was this crazy time where it's like there's late night TV that goes coast to coast. And my parents were courting during that time. My mom lived with her mother, my grandmother, Mohiba. And my dad would come over, and Mohiba, who was Syrian, would make Syrian food for my mom, her sister, and her brothers. And she would make like steak for my father. So she just always started off my father, who was, my mother was beautiful. My father was incredibly handsome. He was in the Air Force at the time. And they tell a story. Without mentioning Steve and Edie ever, but how the night my dad proposed to my mother, he had to wait till my Aunt Aga to go to bed because she was staying up so late. And so they were watching TV late into the night. So then she went to bed, and then my father got down on one knee and proposed to my mother. So in the back of my mind, I have over the years conflated that Steve and Edie were singing a love song in the background, the flickering black and white pixels, when my mom and dad were proposing to each other. Now, I told this story to Edie Gourmet backstage once when I got backstage. And you know what she said to me when I told her that story? Too much information! And then she walked away from me. So Edie and James think alike, because James was like nodding out during my story. But I decided in the 90s I had this refresh, because they were always campy and old in my parents' generation. But then they were around and they were still playing in Vegas, and Sinatra was kind of fading, and LSU and Dean, but Steve and Edie were still performing. And I went with my friend Laura once, I went with Max Muchnick once, I brought my friends from Evolution once. I saw them so many times, and what you were able to do with your business card, because I worked at MTV, I worked at ABC Daytime, you could talk your way back into their dressing room at the end. It was like show business was this great fraternity that we're all part of. And of course, come on in. And Robert Goulet would be there. Hey, meet our friend Tom from ABC Daytime. Or, you know, the first thing Steve Lawrence said to me was like, he came out with this car. He's like, where's Tom Campbell? Where's Tom Campbell from MTV? He goes, Beavis and Butthead? How about Steve and Edie? What do you think? they have one surviving son. He did a special. It was on PBS a couple of months ago about his mother and father. But
is that when we talked about them last? Because I know we just, yes. I looked up because I thought it might have been when Edie passed away, but she passed away like 10 years ago. So.
Yes. And my friend John Tolan said, which many people are saying, but so many people from so many walks of life for the past 25 years have reached out to me with the passing of Steve, saying, you're the first person I thought of. And my friend John Tolan's said the act is back together. So that's really the only thing. Do you have any fond memories of Steve and Edie, or just corny memories, James? You're old enough to know.
No. And it's something that I probably, when I was growing up, I thought they were corny and they were too much of my mother's generation. And I think my mom had some Stephen Eady albums, but I definitely didn't listen to them. It probably wasn't until the 90s when I was able to appreciate the just the beauty of it and the camp aspects of it yes. at the same time.
And that they recorded Black Hole Sun back then too. Black Hole Sun.
Yes. And interestingly, you know, when you think about that, they were in the 1950s and he was 90 years old or something. They were in their 20s when they were having those hits. Yes. You know, they were young kids who were, I always thought of them as always being old. I always thought of Stephen Eady as being in their, you know, 40s and 50s, but they weren't. They were in their 20s and 30s. They were just kids.
She's also kind of famous because she kept saying through her 30s, 40s, 50s, and she got thicker and she had kids. But I have videotape that I will gladly sit down with you where Eady has like a 19-inch waist. And I like to show those and just be like, and she sings like incredible, one of the best voices of all time. And I'm like, we were all thin once, Eady or Meg. We were all thin once. You know, keep that footage.
I thought you were going to wrap it up in a bow and say she sang like a virgin, but
none of that. I'm sure they have Madonna jokes though. They were pure talent. Next time we're together in the same room, I'm going to force you to watch just a couple clips because you know what? They make me miss.
You know, we love it when you do that.
I'm going to do one. Things about I you. Miss a medley. A medley of hits, a Gershwin medley, a show tunes medley. I miss a medley, and they were the best at doing medleys. Okay, we're moving on to number six. Rest in peace, Steve Lawrence.
Number six.
I'm just Ken. Anywhere else, I'd be a 10. Ryan. His Oscar performance was one for the ages. It is probably the best Oscar performance ever, I would say. It's up there with Rob Lowe in Snow White in 1989. I'm just putting that out there. He had the audience in the palm of his hands. He was effortlessly cool. He started in the audience singing from his chair. He jumped up on stage. Suddenly, there were 70 Kens in cowboy outfits. They were doing the choreography of Marilyn Monroe's Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. Suddenly, there's Busby Berkeley choreography.
Yes,
where he's going from the root, you know, from the ceiling. You see all the Barbies, and he's being lifted up. Then, all of a sudden, up rises Slash and Wolfgang Van Halen. And the people in the theater said that people were on the floor. People were gasping. People were screaming that it was like seeing the Beatles for the first time.
Emma Stone broke her gown.
Hey, she did. Her gown bust. She was hyperventilating.
Like a bowl of popcorn. She just
exploded. To be fair, I heard they did this when Billy and Phineas performed too.
No, for Christ's sake. When those two, I'm a girl, now you can be boy. Oh, God damn that song. Let it die. Let it lie bleeding on the ground. To go back to this, Blake, I'm sure even you, musical hating you, were caught up in it for a few moments, even though you hated Barbie. You didn't for a moment say how great a performer he is.
It was amazing, yeah.
Okay, because the thing is, he has been doing this since the Mickey Mouse Club. He mm-hmm. is somebody who can get on stage and there are no inhibitions.
And La La Land.
And La La Land, yes. I mean, he is someone, and if this doesn't lead to a Broadway show for Ryan, I have no faith in the guy.
I used to think of him as such like a brooder, like in a great way. Like he was a sexy brooding actor, and he is so much more. To your point, he can like do anything. He's the new Hugh Jackman.
He is a goofball, and we saw throughout the whole you know, I'm Knuff. My Kennergy. Like he rolls with these things, yeah. And he's just the best we got. He just really is. He is all things. He's a great actor. He's a great comedian. He's a great singer. He's just everything.
And it does suck that Greta and Margot weren't nominated, but it kind of diminished. Well,
but people were saying about Ryan.
He deserved to be nominated.
Yeah, you know, people said that Ryan lost the Oscar, but he won the evening. That, like, literally, all the news cycle was for the next 48 hours was Ryan Gosling, you know, bits and pieces of it.
The Oscars are boring and irrelevant, as a thing. He was the highlight for sure. The only thing that would have made it better, and I'm not even saying it was perfect, was they should have started the show with it, but then there would have been no place to go. But if it all of a sudden he had popped up, just because it was, you know what, they should have started the show, done it in the middle and ended with it is what the show
I think the whole thing just should have been on a loop. Just when people were accepting their awards, he's in the background.
Performing. Instead of playing somebody off, you start doing that.
I'm just Ken.
excellent. It was a special night. I we can talk more about the Oscars, but I mean, they weren't awful. They were just fine, and I feel like they've been talked out.
John Cena was a cute moment. Oh, naked.
The pictures of him afterwards from the side. Did you see that?
Yes, that butt, dear God in heaven. That is a
and whatever maximum. Kind of like adhesive, large adhesive bandage they had holding his junk and his. His hole. Okay, that's good. Thank you. Thank you for reminding me of those things. We are rushing through, and we're already at number five.
Number five.
I went to see this tiny indie movie that only plays in Pasadena at 2:40 p.m. and it's called Drugstore June. But it should have a wider release because it was really good. I heard about it because sometimes I take Steven to work and he works at the Academy, the Television Academy in Lancashire. And there's this billboard, this really colorful billboard of this girl with like sprinkles on her tongue and it says Drugstore June. And then I look and there's all these actors and actresses in it. The main girl's name is Esther Pavitsky. She's hilarious. This movie though has Miranda Cosgrove, Haley Joel Osment, Bad Baby, Bobby Lee, Bill Burr, who was an executive producer, and also weirdly Beverly D'Angelo.
I love Beverly D'Angelo. She looks gorgeous. And also Bill Burr is one of my favorites too. I love him.
Yeah. Beverly D'Angelo still looks amazing. In fact, in this movie, the girl is probably like 22 years old and she plays her mother, which, you know, if you think she played a mother of teenagers in 1989.
Beverly D'Angelo, Tom, looks a little bit like Blythe Danner. She has that gorgeous sort of hippie white hair.
Yeah.
Just that natural cheekbones. She looks fantastic.
June works at a drugstore and she's a cringy Gen Z and always like triggered influencer. Like she won't let her family eat at their favorite burger joint because her ex-boyfriend Davey works there. And Davey is Haley Joel Osment, who is just so cute, don't you think?
What?
Yes, he's like a cute little bear.
That's funny.
It's really funny. It's a indie movie. There's tons of funny one-liners. Like this girl comes in for a pregnancy test and she's like, what kind do you want, cheap or expensive? And she's like, I don't know. I just want to know if I'm pregnant. And she's like, well, teenagers do blue morning because they don't want to be pregnant. But couples do first response because they do want to be pregnant. And then the police come up to her and they're like, what's your name? And she's like, I'm Forever June on everything except June Forever on Snapchat. So
they're like, no, what's your name? It's because she's confused.
Yeah. It's really hilarious. I hope
Tom could not be more interested in this. Look at his face. He is completely checked out. He is looking blank.
I'm not present because I'm pre-panicking about my next thing, which I can't find my notes for. Hi, continue.
I do want to say that you forced me to watch the trailer and I laughed all through it. It does look absolutely hysterical. And I hope that it goes to streaming very quickly because I think it's going to be like one of those bottoms or something like that.
Yeah, it seems kind of like that. Sleeper.
Like I'm just getting a call from Michelle in Human Resources. She just wants to know, did you see this on a weekday at 2:40 or a weekend? Awesome. We got through another three. We've got four more to go here as we count down the top dead things that made us go wow, but we're here to learn and Blake always brings us wisdom in the form of a trivia question. Hit us, Blake, hit us.
Forbes just released the list of highest paid actors of 2023. Do you know who the top people are?
Answer to that and more coming up. Don't go away. You're listening to the WOW Report on Radio Andy.
You're listening to World of Wonders WOW Report. Things that make us go wow.
We're back. It's the WOW Report. where we count down the top 10 things that make us go, wow. It's me, Tom. I'm with James, Blake. Fenton's away, but he'll come back. And right before the break, Blake asked us this provocative question. Would you repeat it, please?
Yes. Forbes released their annual list that they do every year of the highest paid actors. Who are the top actor and actress of 2023?
Tom Cruise, high paid actor.
He was number three.
Who's higher than Tom Cruise? Goodness.
Who got like a piece of the movie? Who got like a
Got to be somebody who gets something off the back end.
Margot Robbie is number one.
Yes.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
He's number two.
The guy from Oppenheimer.
Adam Sandler.
Oh, Netflix. Here we come.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Okay.
All right.
It was also trivia in the same dorm as James in 1984 at New York.
We were very good friends. I hung out with him. I've seen him in his underwear.
Okay, we'll talk more about that off the air. We are now in our countdown, and we have reached the coveted number four.
Number four.
I've already confessed earlier, if it wasn't cut out, that I've lost my notes. But I want to take a moment to recognize a great man who passed away this week at the age of 77. I'm not super articulate about politics. I know where I stand. I know how to vote when voting comes. But David Mixner passed away.
I had to look him up because I did not know about
him. You did not.
No, I didn't. Please tell me.
I mean, what I know about him is he's been political his whole career. The thing that sprang up to me is he was a gay man who came out of the closet rather young, but still was in the closet, still dealt with the torture of the 70s, and you know, and worried that his gayness would affect his political appeal, you know, as he had maybe ambitions. So he ended up being more behind the scenes. And it makes you wonder, like, if he were, you know, he walked so Pete Buttigieg could run into office, we hope. But during, and I don't have, he went to like a humble college. He got very involved in politics. He met a young Bill Clinton a long time ago when Bill Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar and whatever. And they used to like, and he was in DC and they would like sleep on each other's floor when they visited each other. And they really had a great connection. And one of the controversies was he campaigned for Clinton. He focused on Clinton in 92 when other people weren't. Because Clinton kind of came from nowhere, as you recall. And with the idea, and Clinton was the first person to actively speak to queer people, to actively campaign queer people, to promise them. And one of the promises was to repeal the ban in the military. And when that went in office, Clinton faltered and just did the don't tell, don't ask, don't tell. And it caused a rift between the two men for a long time. They ended up repairing it. But ugly politics, right? But as far back as in the 70s, I remember hearing about this, there when Ronald Reagan was governor of California, there was a bill to ban homosexuals from being teachers. Do you remember these things?
Like,
it's almost like trauma. Like, you're like, oh my God, I forgot that even happened. And Mixner created, here was Ronald Reagan, you know, with sights on the White House, this ultra conservative Republican. And he said to him, you are running as an ultra conservative. You are about, you know, at that time, less government interference. So you can run on this and say that I don't want to be in the bedroom. I don't want the government in the bedroom of teachers. You know, I don't want us governing that. And that was, Reagan was able to wrap his head around that to protect his reputation. And he backed off his support of that bill as a result. It did not go through. So David Mixner, and these are just a few examples. He's been there and been there and been there and done so much of the hard work and AIDS, you know, funding and just been a brain and a voice. And if there's controversies about his life, I don't know of any of them. I just know he's always been there. My friend Steve Guy, an old friend I work with at MTV, was the one who released his death publicly. Steve has been a publicist and I was very friendly with him. And David Mixer at one point did a one-man show where he would sort of tell his story sitting in a chair on stage. So, again, I'm not the biggest scholar of him, but I've always lived in a world where David Mixner existed and was doing good. And he will be greatly missed. And I can't even calculate what that man's efforts have done to enriching my life and the opportunities we all have as queer people. So thank you, David Mixner. Rest in peace.
How old was he? And what was the cause of death?
77 or 78. They said long COVID.
Oh, wow.
So, Yeah. All right. On that somber note, we're going to move on and pick it up at number three.
Number three.
Poor Things has come out on Hulu finally. I had not seen it in the theater. It was something that was always on my radar and I never got around to it. I watched it the morning of the Oscars so that I could have some sort of, you know, context for Emma. I ended up loving it. I didn't like it at first. It was a little, it's hard to get into that discordant jangling music in the beginning when she still has the brain of a child that interestingly sort of becomes this lush orchestral score as she gets smarter and smarter. It's a very subtle thing that happens, but I appreciated that. I see why Emma won. I do. I wish that Lily Gladstone had won. Lily's performance was more controlled. It was more subtle. And Emma's performance was volcanic. It was all over the map. It was big. It was dazzling. And I get that the Academy likes that. I have to toot my own horn because in the last summer, I came on this show and said that people are talking. They're saying that Poor Things is going to get Emma her second Oscar and that Saltburn is going to be the most talked about movie of the year. I was right on both accounts. Thank you very much.
No, thank you, James. Thank you.
Thank me. Yes. Fenton, when I mentioned that I was going to do this, wrote very sarcastically, she got an Oscar for shoving an apple up her vajayjay. And I want to point out that so much of the movie is about her discovering her sexuality, her having agency over her sexuality, her discovering her body, her body autonomy, and how she, you know, becomes a prostitute at one point. Very, you know, very matter of factly, this is how I need to earn money. That's how she does it. It's a big part of the movie. In the 1980s, Karen Finley shoved yams up her vagina, and it was most definitely art. We all, it was the biggest artistic statement of the 1980s. Karen Finley shoving, you know, yams up her wahoo.
Are these reincarnations of Ron Popeil's Vegematic commercials from the 70s? A lot of slicing and dicing going on.
A favorite.
I do want to say, in any other year, I think that Mark Ruffalo would have gotten Best Actor because his accent, the way he acts is so nutty. And so you've never seen anything like his performance. I thought it was very moving when her husband and Mark Ruffalo are all appalled when they find out that she was a prostitute and they are disgusted by her and they're furious and they want nothing more to do with her. But her betrothed, he says that he doesn't care, that he's just jealous of the time that these men got to spend with her that he didn't. It's a very poignant moment. And I got a little sniffly over that. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. Tom, have you seen it?
I haven't. I didn't realize it was on Hulu. So now I will watch it.
Yeah,
because I don't have free all that time, but deciding I'm not going to watch any more of Feud. All right, we are moving on now to number two.
Number two.
I want to talk about Michelle Visage becoming the host of season 4 of Down Under.
What? I don't tell me all about it. I have no idea.
You tell us all about it because we want to know. The people want to know.
Just because of schedule, and you know, Rue's doing his book, which, by the way, is number one in the New York Times bestseller.
Yes.
That's amazing. It's available now.
It's just always great things happen for Rue, but I just didn't think another field that he has conquered. Anyway, congratulations. And he's out promoting his book very well, time well spent, clearly. And so Michelle is the new host. But what we're doing is, I wonder who came up with this. We're doubling down on Down Under. Oh, that's my worst accent. Because we're going to have, it's Michelle for continuity. And because who knows drag, you know, since the ballroom, you know, Michelle lives and loves drag.
Right.
And they live and love her, the drag queens. And we also have past winners and past contestants from Down Under on the judges panel. So there's Down Under to Down Under mentorship and judging. And we have guest stars. You know, for so many years, we've been under the cloak of COVID. So we've been able to travel people more because, you know, we're New Zealand. But Michelle, not to hype her, she just did a brilliant job. She was the brilliant, perfect choice for doing it. And she's so grateful to be there. And none of us take for granted what a miracle Drag Race is, you know, and that we get to work on it is like a miracle every day we get to do it.
And for Michelle, I really think that Madonna needs to pull her up for the Vogue segment before she leaves the States. Don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
I know. It's just, yeah, but Michelle always wanted to be Madonna, and now I think Madonna might want to be Michelle. There, I said it. But, you know, and Michelle, I give Michelle points because when I told you I went to the Madonna concert, there was seats here and there, and she knew exactly where she did all the numbers. She'd seen her in the UK, so I was like right in the line of fire.
Wait, you went with Michelle to see Madonna?
No, I showed her the map as I was buying the tickets. I'm like, where does, because she said she doesn't play much at the end. She plays more on the side. And so I was able to.
I love that she knows that.
Yes, exactly. Michelle knows everything. That's the thing about Michelle Visage.
Well, Down Under premieres later this year, but if you have a hankering, you can watch UK versus the World and season 16 airing tonight.
Fridays are drag day. Yeah, do that. It's Drag Race and seasons. They're all great. Season 16 is, I think, everyone's favorite. Got the highest ratings a couple weeks ago. It has in 13 years. It's like, again, miracle. God bless. Thank God the stories get out and that we get representation and that people are still entertained in this crazy world. All right. We are going to take a little break. When we come back, we are going to reveal the number one thing this week that made us go wow. Here on the WOW Report on Radio Andy.
You're listening to World of Wonders WOW Report. Things that make us go wow.
We're back. It's the WOW Report. Thank you for sticking with us. We are at that point in the show where we have counted down 9 of the top 10 things that made us go wow, and now we've reached number one.
Number one.
I have mentioned during this episode that I am psychic. The two things, you know, have been sticking into my head. I talked about how last year I psychically just realized that Emma was going to win the Oscar and that Saltburn was going to be big. I have two movie predictions that I keep hearing about. People are buzzing. It's the buzz is building. Number one, The Fall Guy is going to be the movie, the action rom-com of the year. It's Ryan Gosling in a career-making performance. People are saying this is the best he's ever been. Emily Blunt, they say that the chemistry is off the hizzle with these two, that they are just absolutely gorgeous together, that it's a love letter to Hollywood. It's a love letter to stunt people. It is probably one of the best times you will have at the theater this year. Yes.
Isn't it based on the TV show with Lee Majors called The Fall Guy?
I think that is the property that they originally take it from and build off of. But apparently you are not going to have a better time at the movies this year than seeing The Fall Guy.
That's what The Fall Guy was about from the 70s?
Yes.
The 80s. Yes, it was Lee Majors and he was a stuntman.
Therefore, I'm looking forward to Castle McCormick at next year's Oscars. But go on.
Jake and the Fat Man. The other movie is Monkey Man with Dev Patel that is coming out of South by Southwest. Everyone is saying that he is Oscar bound for it, that this is the movie that will finally transform him into an A-list number one up there with the greats. This is going to be the movie that people will be buzzing about all year long. So those are my two James prediction.
James Swami St. James.
Yes.
Do you have any feelings around the new Ghostbusters? Any feelings about the new
I have never liked a Ghostbuster movie.
I don't think
the least interesting movies of all time.
This one has Annie Potts and Paul Rudd in it, though.
Yeah, but Paul Rudd 20 years ago, maybe you could get me. But he's a good-looking guy. He's a nice guy. But I don't need to. I can see Paul Rudd on Friends reruns. I don't give a fuck about. I don't give a fuck about the Ghostbusters. I'm sorry.
That's not you. That's the spirits talking through you, right?
Yeah.
Well, James, thank you and your spirit guides for giving us the predictions for next year's Oscar race. Already take that, Kelly and Mark. and go to the bank with it. We miss you, Fenton. Hurry back. Until the next time, we'll be here. Come join us. In the meantime, take a little time to enjoy the view and to do something that makes the world go
wow.
Randy and Fenton. Bye.
Bye.